And my name is Afif. I'm the outgoing chair of the Resident Associate Society. It's my distinct privilege and honor to be co-moderating this session with Dr. Ferrata on behalf of the Resident Associate Society and the Young Fellows Association. We have a power lineup of speakers to talk to us today and share their expertise and wisdom on topics related to leadership, particularly for the young surgeon at various levels of training, kind of advancing through your career. We are joined first by Dr. David Spain to give us a talk on how to fail in academic surgery or how to set yourself up for success. The other part of this title was A Cradle to Grave Guide to Professional Misery. So I'm extremely excited to hear about this. Dr. Spain is a professor in chief of trauma and acute care surgery at Stanford University. He is president-elect for the American Association of the Surgery of Trauma, as well as a director on the American Board of Surgery. His research has focused on the assessment of clinical care, systems of care, and assessment of stress response after trauma. We are very excited to have him joining us today. Thanks.
Thank you, Afif. Yes, I am a director for the Board of Surgery, as is Dr. Manna, who just sat down there. So some of you may be seeing us in a hotel room someday. If you're a resident, don't get too nervous. I'm actually pretty nice in my grading. So I have no disclosures except a couple, actually. So one is Dr. Rotundo was supposed to give this talk originally. Unfortunately, couldn't make it. So I actually looked at his slides, and Mike's an awesome storyteller. Like, I'm a good storyteller. There's a couple of my residents in the audience. I'll tell you, I'm primarily a storyteller. Mike's a phenomenal storyteller. So I'll try to do my best to live up to Dr. Rotundo's talk. And the other thing is, I probably have way too many slides in here. So I'm going to channel my inner Dr. Ferrata, and I'm going to talk really fast. So a little bit of this, I'm going to tell you a little bit about, actually, I'm going to mostly tell you like how to set yourself up for success. A lot of these stories are based on things that I've done that have worked out, right? And so you can listen, and you can do what I tell you to do, or you cannot. I'll tell you, I have three sons. They're in their 20s right now. My oldest son, when he was young, if I said, Zach, don't touch that, it's hot, he would touch it. He'd go, yeah, it was hot. I'm like, yeah, I know. And my middle son, I'd say, Ryan, don't touch that, it's hot. And he'd go, okay, and he'd walk away. My youngest son, I go, Josh, don't touch that, it's hot. He turned to his friend Myas and go, Myas, touch that. Myas go, wow, it's hot. Josh go, okay. So we all learn our lessons in different ways. So you can do it the hard way or you can do it the easy way. So I'm going to give you the big picture up front, right? In general, there's really only two ways to fail in academic surgery. One is you take a bad job, or two, you do a bad job. All right? That's pretty much it. Now, occasionally you take a good job and really the bottom does fall out on you. Right, and something changes very unexpectedly, and the program is radically different, you know, than the job you took. But that doesn't happen too often, right? And occasionally you do a bad job, and rarely this has to do with your clinical work, all right? And this is actually, I stole two slides from Dr. Rotundo's talk, and this is one of them. So doing a bad job, pretty much a short list: sexual impropriety, academic dishonesty, stealing, substance abuse. And I added the last one, which is interpersonal behavior, or just having low emotional intelligence, right, and low EQ. Now this one, the top four will get you in trouble really fast. The last one usually takes a while, but I promise you it catches up with you eventually, right? Maybe not right away, not as fast as the top four, but it'll get you in the end. And then there's the other slide I stole from Dr. Rotundo. It's basically easy. You just go buy a book and you read the book and you get all the answers, right? Well, it's not quite that easy. So there are a few keys to success, right? So one is you have to figure out, everyone says find your passion. I'm not so sure I believe that one. I think it's more important to find what you're curious about, right? So what kind of bugs you? What, you know, what's that question that keeps rocking around in your brain in the middle of the night and on the mornings, the things on rounds that just drives you crazy? So figure out what you're curious about and then work on that and dream big. Like, one of the biggest problems I think people have is they set their sights too low. Right? You set your sights high and you miss, you're still going to wind up like way up here, right? So don't be afraid to have big dreams and set your sights really, really high. One of the key things you have to do is be organized. You have to actively manage your time. And this is the thing you have to work on the hardest. I'll go over a few details on how I think you ought to do that. Work hard and work smartly. Put yourself in an environment to succeed. And don't give up. Or another way to put this is don't be afraid to fail. Like, you will make mistakes, but you can survive and you can learn from them. All right, so a few things. Your boss, your chief should protect you. That is their primary job. Right? I spend the vast majority of my time helping everybody that works with me. And that's what your boss or your chief should be doing. When you're looking at that first job, be really wary of being wanted too much. You got to think twice about taking a job where you're going to be the person that's going to make the program take off. You're like, really? Why hasn't it happened yet? You know, and what's wrong with the place that it hasn't happened? And is it really going to be you as a young surgeon coming out of fellowship or residency, and you're going to be the linchpin that's going to make everything work? And what happens if it doesn't work out? Then what's your position? What are you doing? What's your contribution going to be? Now, on the other hand, if you take one of those positions and it all works out, you get all the credit, or hopefully you get all the credit, right? So it could be a win-lose. Those are high-risk positions. You really have to think a lot about before doing something like that. And then again, in general, your first few years in academic surgery, avoid committees at all costs. Maybe one, strategic one, maybe. But that's about it. And you're again, your boss should protect you and keep you off committees. I tell people that I hire, you can't say yes to anything unless I say it's okay, right? Because you just don't want to get stuck going to endless committee meetings, and it'll suck the life out of you. Don't become the resident's new best friend. The easiest thing to do is to go to the OR and do cases. But I can promise you, no one will care when it's time for you to get appointed to national committees or to get promoted. Nobody's going to want to know how many lap coli's you did in your first 2 years. They're going to want to know how many papers did you publish, how many times were you at the podium, how many grants did you write, how much have you contributed to the academic mission. These are the things that are going to help you along in your academic career. It's not going to be the number of cases you do. You do enough clinical work to be credible with the residents, right? You don't want to be you're the research person, you're the rat doctor, right? You're the big data person, and you never operate. You got to do enough work to be credible with the residents and to keep yourself happy, but don't do too much. I promise you that if you want research to be an important part of your academic career, you have to overrepresent that in your first 5 years on the job, right? So if you think you want to ultimately spend 30% of your career doing research, in the first 5 years, you need to devote 60% of your time to research. And then once you get your research enterprise up and running, then you can start to dial up your clinical work, because by that time you're going to have people that will be working for you and helping you out doing your research, right? If you try to do it the other way around, dial up your clinical enterprise and then start to do your research 5 years later, it never, never, never works that way. It's impossible. Once your clinical enterprise gets running, you will never be able to dial it back and start doing research. So if that's important to you, you've got to overemphasize it in the first couple years of your job. Be focused. Distractions are very common, right? Everybody's got their smartphones out, checking their emails. You get text a lot. Paula can call me in my office on Thursday morning and tell me I need to give her a talk for her, right? We are much easier to find. It's hard to hide in your office, but that's all right, right? So one of the things you got to look when you're looking at that first job is you're all going to have what we call LODO work, right? Lights on, doors open. It's the things that have to be done to keep the lights on and the doors open at the hospital, right? So you're going to have service weeks, you're going to have night call, you're going to have clinic days, you're going to have OR days. That just comes with the territory, and that should be really well defined. And all that's mostly predictable. And the question becomes, what are you going to do with your non-LODO time, your discretionary time, that time that you have free to do what you want, right? And you've got to protect that time because it's the most important commodity that you have, right? The two most important words you'll have in your entire academic career are yes and no. And you have to use both of them. So say yes to things that are important, help your career. Say no to things that aren't important, don't help your career. Again, it's easy to be successful what you're good at or what you're passionate or curious about. It's estimated that you probably only need to spend about 20% of your time and the things that you're passionate about, and you'll actually be content with the rest of your work. So the key is determining, like, what are you passionate about? Like, what, gets you excited and build your career about that? So how do you do that? You know, your passion in academic surgery should be some combination of clinical care, research, teaching, and administration. It's getting increasingly hard to do all four. So maybe two of these you can do find out, you know, what's your focus, right? So how do you find your passion? Well, you know, what's the best part of your day? What gets you excited? You know, what gets you excited like a little kid? I will say this is my enthusiastic face. It's also my angry face. It's also my happy face. Meta gets sitting there. She can tell you. It's you know, I do get excited, but I'll show you why you won't necessarily know here in a minute. And then you got to figure out, like, what are you good at? Like, most of us aren't as good at the things we think we're good at. So there are things, there's tools out there like Strength Finders, an interesting little exercise you can do to tell you what you're good at. You can do the Myers-Briggs personality test. Everybody done that yet?
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, it gives you four types. I'm an ENTP, so visionaries. Quick, innovative, alert and outspoken, argue just for the fun of it. That's entirely true. And we like the like resourceful in solving new and challenging problems, right? So ENTPs, we like to use intuition best, thinking second, feeling third, sensing fourth. So if you're waiting for me to sense how you're feeling, forget it. It's not going to happen. And then me in particular, like for my decision making, this is how I do. If you go through my personality test, this is what I like to do. You know, what else could it mean? How's it all interconnected? You know, what are the different ways of doing this? So why am I sharing this with you, you might ask, right? Well, it turns out I'm what's called a quiet ENTP. I'm actually less extroverted than you'd think. And I do actually experience my enthusiasm internally. That is actually a true statement. But the main reason I'm sharing with you is my wife says I don't share enough, so I'm sharing with you guys. But I also think it also explains why I like acute care surgery, right? You got to be quick, you got to be innovative, you got to be alert, you got to speak your mind, and you got to be resourceful, right? So I think it explains why I went into the specialty I chose to go into. So there's a couple other things. This is actually a nice article by this guy Laughlin about finding your focus, and he says there's five key steps. So the first one is you have to step back. And to me, this means a little deliberate reflection, I think, is helpful, right? And actually, you have to build time into your schedule to do this. I try to do it weekly. Nobody's in the office like Friday mornings at 7 a.m. at our place, right? So I'm in my office and literally a cup of coffee and an hour to daydream. Don't do any emails, and just it's time to think and, you know, and reflect. So you can put it on your calendar. Like I said, I like early mornings. I also think it's important to decompress once in a while, take an afternoon off, like, you know, tell the office you're going to the clinic, tell the clinic you're going to the OR, tell the OR you're going to the office, and then just like go to the beach or go to the mall. I'll go to the mall. I like shopping about probably as much as Paula does, but you know, you got to get away and don't go home either, and just like take a few hours to decompress. You do have to define your thing, what's your it. You'd be amazed at how many people in academic surgery really haven't defined like what their thing is, right? So you got to define what your thing is and what is your important thing, and you got to decide why it matters to you, right? And then that determines like what gets done on, you know, deadlines and everything. Beware of the tyranny of the deadlines and just doing the next thing on your list. It's easy to just start answering emails and right? And you can spend an hour answering emails and feel like you've done something productive. You really haven't, right? And then I like the 2x2 grids a lot, right? And you got to do the 4 D's, right? So is it important or not? Is it urgent or not? If it's important and it's urgent, then do it. If it's important and it's not urgent, then dedicate time to it. If it's important, you know, if it's urgent but not important, delegate it, right? And if it's not important and it's not urgent, dump it, right? You got to do the 4 D's. You gotta let your colleagues know what your thing is, right? Communicate to your chief or your senior partner, your family and friends, like what your thing is, so they can support you and respect your time, right? So when you're doing your thing that's important to you and it should be important to them, then they'll support you. And it's important, that's why it's important to communicate them, because you gotta let your boss know why your important thing is important for them. Another important one is think in terms of small milestones. It keeps you from feeling overwhelmed and you can get things done while you're focusing on the long range. So decide what it is you need to do this week or this month, you know, to facilitate your long range goals. And you have to work hard and work smartly. I think this is one of the key things, the traps that people fall into. Most of us are really good at using our clinical teams, right? You have junior residents, you have nurse practitioners, you get them all organized, you make rounds. You're very, very efficient. You go to your office and you are doing work that your administrative assistant should do for you, or that your office or your clinic staff should be doing for you. Those people are there to help you, make them work for you, right? And then treat them like gold. Treat them like gold, right? So got to use all those people. And then again, take care of your non-loaded time. So this means scheduling. Schedule, schedule, schedule. You know, don't be answering emails all day. Block out an hour from 4 to 5, answer emails. Don't be checking them in the middle of OR time. I mean, just schedule, schedule, schedule. It's never going to be perfect. You got to have some flexibility. But if you don't schedule things, your schedule will control you. Schedule time for your passion, if it's yoga or running or going to the mall, I don't care, but put time for it, right? And then schedule your family. Like I said, I have three boys. They're in their 20s now. When they were in high school, when their sports schedule came out, when their band concerts came out, it went on my calendar, right? And my administrative assistant knew that if Ryan had a band concert on a Monday night, I was not available for call, right? And if the boys had a little home lacrosse match, I could take call because it was just across the street. But if it was a away game, I wasn't available. And that was clear on my schedule. Another important thing you got to do is pick the right environment. So you have to know, like, what is work I'm being asked to do? Who am I going to be working with? What are the resources available to me? You know, like, in my group, in my department, in the medical school, does it align with the things I want to do and the research I want to conduct? What's the culture and work environment at the place I'm looking at? And what's their track record, right? If they haven't made anybody succeed in your position, you're probably not going to be the first one. All right? Palchinsky was a Russian engineer who studied failure, right? And he said there's a few things that principles that he evolved. And he said you have to try some new things and expecting some will fail. But what you have to do is make your failure survivable, right? So survive in small spaces, in safe places, in small steps, right? So don't do that in the OR, right? If you're going to take chances, do it in your research. But make sure it's things that you can survive and learn from them, right? So another important thing is you just can't give up, right? So you will stumble, right? You will fail, right? Many of the residents, like you've been like number one in your class, top of the thing, blah, 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 right? When you get to be an attending, things won't always work out, right? Your abstracts and manuscripts will get rejected, I promise you. It's happened to all of us, right? Your grants won't get funded. And worst of all, your patients will die. It's going to happen to every one of you sometime, you know, in your career. And you have to be able to face it and deal with it, right? And you just have to remember this Japanese proverb, right? You fall 7 times, stand up 8. You got to be able to get up. Now, I have a slightly different opinion about the whole burnout resilience thing. It may not be totally popular, but I'm a little bit of a contrarian. But I think that there's a little bit of resilience that can be learned, right? So same boiling water that softens a potato hardens the egg. So it's not always just the circumstance. It's a little bit of what you're made of as well, too, right? So this is another interesting article by this former FBI agent, and he says there's 5 things you can do to develop mental toughness. And I think these are actually good skills for a surgeon, right? So number one, as I said, is emotional awareness. This is frequently what trips people up. It takes longer than you think to come to a head, but it's a big problem. So you have to be aware of what makes you tick and manage your own emotions, right? And learn to control them instead of letting them control you. And if a situation makes you angry, you have to examine your anger. So I actually learned this from one of my junior partners, Dr. Kristen Staudemeyer, who's extremely smart. And she is very good about when things like if I get angry, she's like, why did so-and-so make you angry? And it's a skill I actually, you know, in my 50s learned from one of my junior partners. And stop and think, like, why am I getting angry in this situation? And for me, it's almost always an honesty or a fairness question. I think somebody's being dishonest or somebody's being unfair. And then I deal with that as opposed to, like, you know, getting mad. So when you start to, you know, feel your emotions rise, you got to slow down and think, why am I doing this? What's making me tick here? And then, oh, somebody in the back leaned up against the lights. Good job. All right. Keep going. There you go. Awesome. You can blame it on that tall guy next to you. That's Clem. You can blame it on Clem. So, and then you have to think about other people's emotions, right? So if somebody else is getting angry, why are they getting angry? What's going on? And so you got to think about that. You have to push through your, all right? So Masario says you got to push through your limits. So you have to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. As I say, don't generally do this in the OR, but you might want to do this in your research efforts, right? Because fear of change leads to paralysis, and you don't want to do that. And then new situations force you to grow. And the other thing he says, you got to control your mind. So we are what, you know, we become what we think, right? So you're going to have negative thoughts. They're unavoidable, but you can choose not to, to dwell on them. And again, he says, focus, 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 right? Olympic athletes, you know, don't rely on luck. They practice with laser focus until with a goal in mind, right? And it's not just about repeating the same task over and over. I heard a great thing, that quote the other day, somebody said, don't practice until you get it right. Practice until you can't get it wrong. Right? Oh, that was a great quote. And then again, you got to be effective in your practice. Keep your goals in front of you. Put your ego on the back burner. And I had this thing, find your Carol. All right, so Carol was a nurse practitioner that I inherited when I moved to California. Right? At age 41, I would have never hired Carol. She was a leftover hippie's flower child, nurse practitioner. At 41, I would have, if I interviewed her, I would have never, ever hired her, right? And for 10 years, aside from my wife, Carol was my best friend. She retired 8 years ago. I miss her every day. Like, she was amazing. But she had a way of telling me things I didn't want to hear, but I needed to hear. So we go to a meeting, we come out, and she go, you know, David, you didn't really handle that very well. You made so-and-so mad. But she had a way of saying that to me that I would listen to her, and I would take it in, and I wouldn't get angry. And she probably had, aside from my wife, Carol probably had more in changing me and making me grow than any person I've known my entire life. And again, at 41, I wouldn't have been smart enough to hire her, but I did inherit her. And she was phenomenal. So you have to find out, like, who's the Carol in your life? Like, who's going to tell you the little things you need to hear, but don't necessarily want to hear? Because, you know, if you can get honest feedback for your own good, it's invaluable, right? So again, you got to pursue growth, learn, try, repeat, above all else. Oh, so above all else, too, people who are mental tough are readers and learners. So voraciously learners love to read and love to learn new things. I will give you two things. Here's two books I've read recently that I think would be very helpful for somebody starting out. One's called Deep Work by Cal Newport. He's an engineer or something like that. It has a lot of talk about just about scheduling. It's academic, but he's an engineer, so his schedule is a lot more predictable than ours is, but there's a lot of good concepts in it. And then How to Write a Lot, A Practical Guide to Academic Writing. And this Sylvia's a psychologist, but again, there's a lot of stuff in here. It's all about scheduling and work habits. So those are two good books I would recommend for people starting out. So again, one other thing. So 7 ways mentally strong people handle stress. We're all going to have stress in our jobs. It comes with the territory, right? So you got to accept that's part of life. You got to keep it in perspective. You have to take care of your physical health, right? You got to choose healthy coping skills. It's another thing, like a lot of people who are burned out are using unhealthy coping skills. Balance social activities with solitude. I love my alone time, man. You know, I come home from work, it's like 10 minutes, nobody talk to me. Please, nobody talk to me. Let me hang up my suit. You know, just let me decompress. You got to acknowledge your choices. Always look for the silver lining. Just remember, you can't pour from an empty cup, so you have to take care of yourself first. This is my philosophy. You actually can have it all, right? So I have been married 36 years, all to the same woman. We still have fun. This is us actually in French Laundry kitchen, which is a pretty spectacular evening we had recently on our anniversary. And those are the three boys. So the one on the left was one that would have to touch the hot burner. The one in the middle one is one that wouldn't do it. And the one on the right is the one that would get his friend to do it. But, you know, they're pretty happy and none of them have a permanent record yet. So that's a plus. So again, number one, you have to be happy outside of work to be happy in work, and the opposite's true, right? If you're unhappy at work, you're gonna be unhappy at home. So both have to work. I don't believe in work-life balance either. I think it's like work-life integration or something like that, right? You have to do both, right? So your work needs to be part of your family, and your family needs to be part of your work. Figure out what you're passionate about or curious about, dream big, be organized, manage your time. If I could tell you one thing, it would be manage your time. So work smart. And work hard. It put yourself in an environment to succeed. As a junior faculty, my first job was with J. David Richardson. Dr. Turner can tell you this. He is a mentor extraordinaire. Like, David Richardson is unbelievable. And anything I've ever done or been lucky enough to accomplish in my career is because I spent my formative years with a guy that is a genius at mentoring people. And so you got to find somebody like him to help you out. And again, above all, don't be afraid to give up. Don't give up. Don't be afraid to fail. 3 simple rules in life. If you don't go after it, you're not going to get it. If you don't ask, the answer will always be no. And if you don't step forward, you'll always be in the same place. And so remember what Nelson Mandela said, there's no passion to be found playing small or in settling for a life that's less than the one you're capable of living. So thank you.